Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why shut, won't you talk, see? I know the story, just listen to me. Talk.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Well, it's Tuesday, June 25th, 2019. This is show number 72. And there is a lot going on. this is the trademarked, I tell you, trademarked spouting off. And I'm just having so much fun with that. Now I have two logos. Now we have two logos instead of one. One red, white, and black, and one spectacular logo that Doug put together for us that just kind of brightens up our logo. You can see that at www.karencataline.com, and you're going to be seeing the red, black, and white one around as well, because I'm going to be a roving reporter for the Western Conservative Summit the second week of July. At least I'm going to play one on TV. Actually, I'm going to play one on the radio. I'm not going to be playing it on TV. And I just love those roving reporters that go around and talk to college students who don't know who's the vice president, don't know geography, don't know much of anything, but they do know that Trump is a racist and needs to be impeached. They don't know why. And it isn't just college students. It's a whole bunch of people that are watching a little too much MSNBC and CNBC. I wrote, this is slightly an aside, I wrote a piece this week called, it's my latest blog called, "You're Attacking Free Speech If You Use It to Attack the Media?" Question mark. And it blows my mind, the arrogance of the media. It truly does. Donald Trump said this past week that the media, actually the New York Times in particular, which isn't the whole media, is just part of it, that the New York Times committed a, quote, virtual act of treason for reporting that the United States is substantially increasing cyber attacks on Russia. Well, Trump says that isn't true, and he's quite concerned about what the public and what Russia is going to think about that. The New York Times has made no secret of the fact that they, along with the rest of what is what I prefer to call the legacy media, that they want to get rid of Donald Trump. They don't care that you and I voted for him, and I proudly did. They don't care that he won the election fair and square, no matter how many, I don't know, 473 protestations by Hillary Clinton, who says that she should have won, and because she didn't, things are unfair. You've seen this prosecuted way, way, way too many times. It was delicious, I have to say. It was delicious when Hillary Clinton was horrified that Donald Trump might not accept the results of the election. And then for 2.5 years, she hasn't accepted the results of the election. And that has been the trend, the pattern of Donald Trump, as it has been going for 2.5 years, more, I guess, since well before he was inaugurated. And that is that he keeps hoisting people who come after him by their own petard. I just love that phrase because it really fits. Donald Trump doesn't do this accidentally, mind you. He does it on purpose. But getting back to the New York Times, so Times publisher A.G. Sulzberger responded in a Wall Street Journal op-ed. See, this is cool. So he went to his competition, which, in my opinion, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times is no competition for the Wall Street Journal. Not that I read it frequently. They all have pay walls. And I get it eventually anyway. So I get this news, and so can you. So the Wall Street Journal posted an op-ed of A.G. Sulzberger saying that Trump crossed a dangerous, dangerous line for criticizing the press. Really? So there are lines to criticism? You mean like the lines the Democrats draw when they are photographed having bloody heads of Donald Trump, when they are rioting in the streets over Donald Trump, when they celebrities say at award shows that nobody watches anymore, including myself. God, I used to love Robert De Niro. I really did. You know, I am a Godfather junkie, or a Godfather aficionado, shall we say. And Robert De Niro had to open his big, big mouth and say F Trump. Because after all, because he's Robert De Niro, he deserves a right to tell you what to think and that he's right and you're wrong. And there's just a bunch of those. I'm on Twitter, and I follow a couple of these celebrities because they're so incredibly entertaining, their arrogance. But as usual, I digress. So, by the way, these celebrities that I follow, just to laugh at them and to repost their stupidity, is Bette Midler, who not too many years ago was photographed picking up trash along the streets in California and New York City, and it's laudable because they could both use it. But now, you know, you never hear her complain about the tent cities and the defecating and the urinating on the street, because of course that's a lefty, you know, golden cow or whatever, sacred cow, golden. I mean, sacred, not golden, that you may not criticize. So, you know, it is amazing to me the left switches gears every 5 seconds. You could get whiplash trying to keep up with their hysteria, which is contradictory to last week's hysteria. Nonetheless, and I return back to Times publisher A.G. Sulzberger. He says it's dangerous to criticize the press. These people take themselves so darn seriously. It is scary. And they have continued to claim, and there are people who actually buy this. This scares me that there are so many people who buy such a ridiculous argument, that to employ, exercise your free speech in this country, your right to free expression, which, by the way, as an aside, does not mean you don't get held accountable for what you say. It means the government can punish you for saying it. If you exercise your right to free expression and criticize the media, you are putting the First Amendment in danger. This is amazing, to hide behind such demagoguery as that. So if you'd like to take a look at my latest blog post, and you can see all of my blog posts, there are growing and huge archives of my stuff, my pontificating, or better yet, spouting off. You see, I could have called it pontificating off, but it just didn't have the same ring to it. So I'm calling it spouting off. And jazz to have that little circle with the capital R with a circle around it. I gave the proper amount of money to the government so that they could tell me that I have a trademark. So if you see anybody using spouting off for either creative entertainment or podcasts or talk shows or soon to be a book, I'll have to tell you about that coming up in the weeks to come, well, then you can tell me about it, because they are violating my copyright, or rather my registered trademark. Oh, God, I feel so important now. Anyway, so if you want to see that, the archives, the blog posts, and the op-eds, and just give you a heads up, I probably won't be writing quite as many op-eds while I work on my book, because I'm jazzed about this book. I have the best editor ever. Her name is Jessica Swift. If you ever want to write a book, hire her. She's the best. And so, excuse me, in weeks to come, we're going to be putting out the second edition of my first and only book thus far, called Fatlash, Food Police and the Fear of Thin. But there will be an updated introduction with the old introduction still there. And there will be an updated, what do you call that? An afterword, I guess you would call it. And everything in the middle you'll also get. And that's coming out soon. Can't tell you exactly, but soon. And then there will be an ebook called Spouting Off. But what I'm going to be spouting off first about is boundaries. That's one of my favorite subjects. So what? I decided to write a book about boundaries because it transcends both personal and political issues. In fact, I see the issue of boundaries in a good many of the things that are prominent in politics today. And again, I'm going to tease you because there's a lot more to talk about before I bring on our guest. And I'm going to be talking about our guest soon because she's someone I've known in politics for quite a while. And she is amazing. If you want, okay, I'll tell you. If you want to know how to get involved and make a profound impact simply by addressing those things you care most passionately about and going out and doing it yourself instead of waiting for someone else to do it, Laura Carno is one of those people, one of the rare ones, who not only is an author in her own right, she wrote a terrific book called Government Ruins Nearly Everything, but she also is heading up something called Faster Colorado, which shouldn't be controversial, but it is. And it is a program to teach and train interested teachers, not everyone, to carry concealed weapons in classrooms so there will be somebody to fight back. God forbid there is a mass shooting threat or really any kind of threat of a bad guy, there will be people there who won't be sitting ducks. And we'll talk about that and a whole lot more with Laura Carno. She's also a visiting fellow for the Independent Women's Forum, which is also wonderful, one of my favorite people. It's so much my favorite that I'm having a brain drain and I can't think of it. It's Tammy Bruce, who is like the president of that organization. She's definitely one of my favorites. So what I really wanted to get to today, and there's just, like I say, so much, is that among the things that have been going on this week, Trump is returning from Japan from the G20 summit. That's always fun. There are Wednesday and Thursday, the first Democrat debates. God, a year and a half before the election, there will be loads and loads and loads of Democrats debating. Now, I generally would avoid this by like the plague, but actually, I think it ought to be a whole lot of fun. I say break out the popcorn and watch them try to bribe the voters with their promises, one bribery after another. It was often said a long time ago that the Republicans will never be able to win the bidding war with Democrats because Democrats don't care how much they promise you. And in fact, everything that they promise, especially these radical kind of Democrats today, which are, you know, basically most of them either admitted socialists or supporting socialist, hardcore socialist policies. They don't mind if they bet the store because it's all about wealth redistribution and creating this sense of discontent of the public, pitting one group against another at the taxpayers' expense or at the makers' expense. So that you can bring about socialism. In fact, I would argue that just about everything you're seeing today that is nationally backed with huge amounts of money, socialism is the real goal. And in the past, and in still, there are a lot of socialists who refuse to admit what they're really about and what they really believe. And they've made a lot of progress and headway by not really telling us the truth about what they want, what they believe. Now you have a few people that are just so new and are the offspring of these socialists that have been indoctrinated in socialist ideology in K-12 education, like the infamous, and she is, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that they're too honest. I love it. They're honest enough to say to you that they are either card-carrying socialists, they are, quote, democratic socialists, which is garbage because socialism is not democratic. Socialism is authoritarian by its very nature, because you will always have people who will disagree with having their property and their rights confiscated. And the only way that benevolent dictators, and they're not benevolent at all, can affect their socialist utopia is to continually lower the boom on anybody who disagrees. Is it any wonder that today we are seeing the enactment of socialist policies in the pop culture by demonizing people who dare to disagree about LGBTQ victim groups, dare to disagree that all women are victims, dare to disagree that America is an evil country, and on it goes. So the reparations movement that started for blacks, Elizabeth Warren had to up the ante of bribery. So she recently came out with the reparations for gays. I kid you not. Reparations for gays. Mind you, the left doesn't and has never believed in reparations, that criminals need to pay restitution to their victims for hurting them, harming them, robbing them of their property, and possibly of family of their loved ones. They don't believe in true justice or restitution. What they believe is in bribing certain victim groups that they're afraid might be going off the reservation. Like, for example, blacks. Because the dirty little secret is that more and more blacks are beginning to support Donald J. Trump. Why? I don't know, nothing very big, except maybe the fact that he's actually delivered in lowering the black unemployment rate and the Hispanic unemployment rate to historically low levels, probably the lowest in recorded history, is what I've read. And you're going to hear a lot more about that. I mean, you're going to hear that in the coming election. So I'm hardly the only one to say that. But it bears repeating, because the Democrats don't want you to know that. And you know what? They're not very impressed by it either. They don't want you to be impressed by it. Why? Because they don't really think work and self-reliance is really all that great. In fact, if the truth be known, this growing crop of socialists wants you not to work. They want the government to pay you to sit on your rear so that you can be dependent on them and they'll be able to tell you what to do and how to live. Now, you've got to be compliant in order for them to have their socialist dream. Therefore, working, which helps you to take care of your own family, is really not a big priority. In fact, if you look at it, the previous president kept promising jobs, 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 but never delivered and wasn't very unhappy when he didn't deliver. In fact, the unemployment level was higher than ever under Obama. And if the truth be known, and this is conjecture, and I'm going to conject because I host a show called Spouting Off. And so I'm going to conject off. And that is that the socialist enactment and remaking of this country includes lowering the value of work, lowering the value of self-reliance and self-sufficiency and independence, and for that matter, individualism. You know, because it's the individualists and the self-reliant ones. And these are all things the left used to be for in the 70s, even in the 60s. You know, free love, do your own thing. They don't believe that anymore because they've really progressed on the way to socialism to such an extent that now they are advocating government dependency, not do your own thing. They're advocating government control over your life, not do your own thing. And they're advocating collectivism. This is among the most disturbing, that they are actively inculcating the notion that you are what group you belong to. Collectivism in all its forms leads to the very bigotry that the left has been ridiculing everyone else. But see, there's a double-edged sword, because the left can, on the one hand, tell you that they're horrified by bigotry, but then they can engage in it by expanding the definition of bigotry to include anyone who disagrees with them. That gives them license to hate everybody they don't like and doesn't agree with them. And license to hate people just because they disagree with you is, what is it? Bigotry. Ding, 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 ding. So, you know, it's a vicious circle. That's why they can't acknowledge any progress in, you know, against racism and bigotry. Meanwhile, you've got some of the most overt, hate-filled bigotry, racism, and anti-Semitism lurking in the Democrat Party itself. Case in point. Oh, our friend Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's always these arrogant people that have three names, you know. I'm sure there are other people with three names, being an individualist, who are not as egregious and offensive and ridiculous and ignorant as this woman. This woman compared the way that we are housing and taking care of the children of illegal aliens, children themselves being illegal aliens, left doesn't want to call them that, people who are here illegally, some of them who have been used by people that are not their parents as mules. Well, mules is a drug term, but used and exploited so they could be used to get into this country. And so what is the left all worked up about now? That America isn't taking care of these intruders well enough. They are intruders. It would be as if somebody came to your house, didn't even knock on your door, broke into your home and said, you have to take care of me. I'm entitled to all the same rights as your son, your daughter, your uncle, your mother-in-law who lives with you. You have to take care of me. You have to clothe me. You have to feed me. Because if you don't, you are a xenophobe. You are a hater. So the left has been perpetrating this lie on the public. And so the public, being bullied and afraid to speak out, some of them, have just accepted and bought into this ridiculous notion. So what the left is asking you to do is simply to ignore your common sense, ignore your good sense of right and wrong, good and bad, and jump on the leftist socialist bandwagon. And nobody has jumped on that bandwagon and has been more clearly indoctrinated, not the brightest bulb, is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's decided that America is running concentration camps. Now, you know, as a person who puts the Judeo in Judeo-Christian, and you don't have to be Jewish to be outraged by this comparison, I guess you could say I'm a little offended by that. Do I expect the government to protect me because I'm a snowflake? No. But I get to be just as outraged and offended as I want to be. And I'm outraged and offended that somebody who is a supposed lawmaker in this country is so ignorant of our history. Number one, she's shown that she's a Jew hater, as are there, unfortunately, sadly, several of them in the Democrat Party-controlled House. that Cortez was offered an opportunity to go visit the real concentration camps, as I was reading, and she turned it down and called it a right-wing scheme. Why? Because she doesn't want to have her mind changed with facts. I don't think she knows anything about the Holocaust, or if she does, she's completely dispensed with it because she's decided that Jews are the criminals. Gee, sounds kind of racist and bigoted to me. But everything, all these concepts have been turned upside down and on their heads for the purpose of political gain. I can't think of anything that has not been poisoned and politicized in American life today, or isn't about to. And I would say that it's very important to be as individualistic and to question everything. Question everything. Argue with me. It's important. I love arguing. In fact, it's more fun to argue with people I disagree with, or it's more fun to talk to people I disagree with sometimes, simply because that is exercising your First Amendment right. You're not going to put your First Amendment right in danger by criticizing a propaganda-driven, dishonest media that has appointed itself lord and master over the rest of us. In fact, I am deeply concerned that it isn't just the New York Times, but it is just a great majority of media outlets that have decided, much like Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and all of these arrogant progressive leftists who've decided what you're allowed to have as your president. Meanwhile, God forbid if an avowed socialist like Bernie Sanders were the candidate, or somebody else, there are plenty of other avowed socialists that haven't admitted to it yet, they would say that no one has the right to take down a duly elected president as long as it's one they approve of. So the hypocrisy is breathtaking. And it is particularly disturbing when what has often been called the fourth estate, the press, has been corrupted to the extent that it has been. So if you're listening to me, you probably are a little more aware of these kinds of things than a lot of people. But tell your friends. Tell your friends that the First Amendment is not so fragile. Number one, the First Amendment prevents you from being punished by the government for what you say. It doesn't prevent you from being held accountable for what you said. It doesn't prevent you from being fired for what you said, although that is a whole other issue as to how the culture has decided it's going to be more authoritarian than the Constitution. This is scary. This is a problem. And when there's a monopoly of thought, it is because there are people who feel threatened by a difference of opinion. And that is what we have today, people that feel threatened by a difference of opinion. And if they're threatened by you having a different way, a different view of life, a different thought pattern, if that threatens them, I got news for you. They are a threat. Because someone who can tolerate your difference of opinion is no threat to you. Someone who will go to any lengths possible to shut you down, call you a racist, a bigot, a homophobe, and they've been getting away with that for years already. Those are the people that really are dangerous because they want to control the narrative. And in some quarters, they're doing the right thing. I mean, excuse me, forgive me. They are succeeding. They are not doing the right thing. They are succeeding. Well, having misspoken that poorly, I guess it's time to take a break. See, it is indeed time to take a break. When we return, I will be very delighted to have with us Laura Carno of Faster. of her book, which is Government Ruins Nearly Everything, and she's always got a project in the works. So stay tuned after this break, and you're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio. Stay with us.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Karen Cataline, host and producer of Spouting Off. Got an opinion, a guest suggestion, or a show tip? Follow me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know your thoughts. All you need is to know how to spell my name. It's the same on Twitter, Facebook, and www.karencataline.com. Karen is spelled the normal way, no goofy Y's or Q's, K-A-R-E-N, and Cataline is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Want more Spouting Off? You can find the complete archive of Spouting Off shows at www.karencataline.com. All my op-eds and blog posts are there too. That's www.karencataline.com. Thanks for listening, and if you have a moment, please spread the word about Spouting Off. A beautiful day here in the middle part of the country. I like to be a little vague about those things. But most of you know that I am in Wyoming and northern Colorado, but we cover issues all over the country. And when it's important, we like to also feature some of the things going on in Colorado because, after all, Colorado is the tip of the spear right now in left-wing Nevada politics. I'll be talking to you a little bit about that in the future. We have someone who hails from Colorado, and I've been wanting to get her on the show for a long time. I have interviewed her before. Welcome to Spouting Off, Laura Carno.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good. So we talked off the air, and I told you I didn't have your bio right in front of me, and of course, I could go on and on, but tell us a little bit about how you got involved being the pundit. I know that you are a visiting fellow with the Independent Women's Forum, which I just love. You do all kinds of wonderful things, and you have originated a lot of programs. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to start doing all this stuff.
Sure. You know, I like to say that I tripped and fell into politics. I was in the banking field for 25 years. And during 2008, when all of the TARP crisis was happening, I found myself out of a job in the banking industry. And it was the year of the 2008 presidential election. I was very clear on who I did and didn't want for my president. So I went into a campaign office and said, how can I help? And I've said yes to many things since then. And my advice to people when they say, how do I get started in politics? I tell them to say yes to things, and you'll figure out what you like and what you don't like.
So the thing to do is start, and then each thing will lead you to the next thing.
Right, and through that, you'll find, you know, I really like this part about it, but I didn't like this part. So what can I do that only has the part that I liked about that last job? And, I mean, I think that's probably good advice for any career field, right? But politics just seems to be a bit less usual.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer in that, too, that people find what their gift is, what their skill is, and if they can give that to whatever movement or issue that interests them, that's the best thing. Not everybody is an envelope licker, and lots of people are fabulous at office management, but whatever your skill is, and boy, oh boy, do you have some skills, you continue to surprise and amaze a lot of people in the Colorado area. You've been on national shows, you've been on Fox News Business, right, and all over for your trailblazing programs that you have spearheaded. Let's first talk about FASTR, because that is as important and as critical to today's political landscape as anything I have seen. It addresses training teachers, willing volunteer teachers, to actually carry concealed in schools and train them to be first responders in the event, God forbid, of a school shooter or other crisis. Amazing how much pushback you might get for that, but tell us how you got started doing that and where's the program at right now?
Sure. Well, what a lot of people don't know, and I'll just give this a national frame of reference, what a lot of people don't know is that there are 32 states that have laws on the books right now that allow some process for armed school staff. So 32 states. That's a lot of states, and we hear almost nothing about this. That's because most schools that have armed staff do so very quietly. It's safer for the folks that are armed, and frankly, they're not armed because they want to be on TV and talk about it. They're armed because they're protecting children. So here in Colorado, where I am, we started this FASTR training program. We're in our third training year right now. And we got this this curriculum from Ohio. Our friends in Ohio started an organization 7 years ago now called FASTR Saves Lives. And it was basically a curriculum to teach these life-saving skills and bring world-class training to these folks who are armed on campus. And here in Colorado, it's actually been law for 15 years, and almost nobody knew about it until we brought some free training to Colorado. So essentially, I imported this FASTR curriculum to Colorado. It's not magical curriculum. It's exactly what SWAT people learn when they learn how to stop an active killer. And then it's also what paramedics learn when they're trying to stop the bleeding. So it's not like it's unique, but it basically imparts a little slice of law enforcement skills, very critical law enforcement skills, and a little slice of very critical medical skills to these folks who are carrying on campus.
Wow. And Colorado has been a hub, sadly, for school shootings. There just was one in the Arapahoe County area in which one very brave kid was killed trying to lunge. He lunged at the shooter, and he was the only one that was killed, and I'm sure he saved lives. His name was Castilla, right? I should have his name offhand, but
Kendrick
Castilla, who had told his parents that he was going to do that if they should ever be threatened in that way. And he was. We're not going to get off on that tangent because I could go on and on. But One thing I just want to state before to make sure we have the time is this is, for our listeners, the perfect example of seeing a need and going and filling it. And that's one of the reasons I'm such a fan of your work, because not only are you got the smarts, but you decide where your skills could be most used and needed, what you're passionate about. Nothing could be more important than saving kids' lives in school. And then you pick something and you make it happen. So here you went and you found a training, and then you brought it to Colorado, and you're getting the deserved accolades for doing that. So here's a question for you. The left has been concertedly against this program, and I have a theory that I want your comment about.
Okay.
My theory is that the left that is against this sort of thing and has tried to mischaracterize it as, oh, forcing teachers to have guns or all of that, or it's going to be so dangerous because the cops won't know who has the gun and who doesn't. They're always throwing stones at a program like this. My theory is that they cannot afford to have anyone see a gun as a positive thing in a particular situation. Least of all, saving lives. What say you on that?
Yeah, and I've definitely heard that. I think there is probably a little bit of that in some slices of the pie, so to speak. So if you look at, and I'm just going to use very general terms. I know that it's not as cut and dried as this, but if you look at the left and the right, and there are people who on the far right of the gun argument say all guns everywhere for everybody and no permits and all that kind of stuff. And then on the far left, they say no guns anywhere. We should ban them. We should confiscate them, all that stuff. In the middle are parents and grandparents. And what's interesting to me is as political as most people think armed teachers and other school staff, how political that might be, it is not political for parents and grandparents with kids in schools. And it almost is moving in a direction that I think over the years we've seen school choice go. And back in the day, conservatives loved school choice. Liberals loved teachers' unions and cookie-cutter schools. That's just completely changed because liberal parents want their kids to get the best education possible. And so they are looking, too, and saying, hey, hang on a second. My neighborhood school isn't doing it. Where can we go? I talk to so many parents and grandparents in the course of what I do. I don't ask anybody their political affiliation, of course, because this isn't political. But the number of people who out themselves to me and say, I can't believe I'm having this conversation with you. I'm a liberal who loves gun control, but I want my kid returned home alive every day. And so it almost feels like I could be in this bubble of non-reality, but the folks I'm talking to, it feels far less political because parents, all parents, regardless of what side of the aisle, they want their child to be alive at the end of the day.
Yeah, Laura, but it remains to be seen that if you want your kid to come home alive every day, you're going to want to be as practical and realistic about addressing the threat as you can.
Sure.
And so political ideology kind of goes out the window when your kid's life is at stake. Right. It seems so self-evident to me and people. And of course, I wasn't always very concerned or interested in guns. And I came from a background in which my mother was terrified of guns and all of that. So I made quite a journey from that point. But if you want somebody to be able to protect your kid, they're going to have enough firepower to stop the person who's threatening them. It's not rocket science.
Right.
And yet, yeah.
I was just going to say, and most people understand that when they think of a school resource officer. This is an armed member of your local police department or sheriff's office. And most people say, yeah, that's good. That's good for that member of law enforcement to be there so that if something happens, he or she can respond. But there are a couple of problems with that. Number one, the SRO, which is short for a school resource officer, sometimes has to leave campus uses the restroom, might need to go to a different campus, that they're not there all the time. But if we can get our heads around the idea that somebody very well trained with a firearm could stop somebody from killing our kids, then it's not a super long leap to say, okay, well, is there a way for other people to be that well trained? And that's what we've done at Faster.
That is so cool. I could talk another hour about Faster, but how, since you have a lot of projects on the boards, people who are listening outside of Colorado, where can they go to get involved and to help their schools and their communities have trained people in school who will protect their kids? Who can they go to? Where do they go to for that?
Yeah, so folks outside of Colorado, I would say go to FasterSavesLives.org. I kind of refer to Ohio as the mothership. They started all of this,
okay.
And they really have a good handle on what's going on in the rest of the country. Folks in Colorado should go to FasterColorado.com for what we're doing here in Colorado and see how you can get involved.
Just one last question before I switch gears here, and that is that when this all came out and there was a flurry, and there always are, unfortunately, of school shootings, I encountered someone who I'd gone to school with, hadn't really stayed in touch with, their typical liberal, because I went to an urban, very Jewish liberal school, not parochial, but just in a very Jewish neighborhood in the hood in Denver. And she posted how horrified and how stupid and outrageously ridiculous, I cannot use the adjectives enough, that having teachers armed in schools would be. And that's the reaction, and that's the, you know, that's the attitude that you're up against. So I think you're winning. I think this is winning the argument. If you're going to have armed people protecting politicians, most of whom are not worth anything, I don't want them to get killed, mind you. If you're going to have armed people protecting our gold and our money and banks and at sporting events, it would be nice if we'd at least give as much consideration to kids.
Right.
So,
yeah, these are, is there anything more precious than our children?
Let's just hope so, that we think that people know that, think that, and they put their money where their mouth is and do it. Excellent job. You have another passion. You have a lot of them. But before you started doing Faster, you were writing a lot about limited government issues, another issue after my own heart. Great name of your book called Government Ruins Nearly Everything. And there's something, again, that people outside of Colorado may not know about and may, in fact, be under attack, like everything in Colorado currently is. There's something called Tabor, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, named after Horace Tabor, a local historic figure, but it's the tax... What does it stand for precisely?
Taxpayer's Bill of Rights.
Yeah, it is the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. I don't know what the AO is. That's just so they could make it Tabor. But the taxpayer.
I think the TA is from taxpayers. We'll go
taxpayers.
With that.
Well, there you go. There you go. And Tabor is under huge attack right now as we speak. And Tabor, just for those who don't know, has been cloned in other states around the country, and it basically just demands that before legislators and government, state government, can raise your taxes, they have to ask you first. Yeah, they have to put it to a vote. Not a huge deal. It might be slightly more complicated than that, but that's the fundamental idea. Democrats got a monopoly in Colorado, and that's why Coloradans are fighting back. What's the first thing they want to do? They want to get rid of any boundaries on their ability to spend money. So tell us a little bit about what the Democrats are doing and just Tabor in general. What do we need to know about that? Because that's coming to a state near you.
Sure. So first of all, let's say that, and we've had it for 27 years, Tabor turns 27 this year. We are so stinking lucky in Colorado to have a taxpayer's bill of rights. And as you said, it is that simple. It requires the government, whether it's state or municipal or what have you, to ask for our permission before they raise our taxes. And if you want to make your case, if you're a school board who wants need more money for the school board, make your case to the taxpayers. The same at the state level, make your case. We might say yes, but the law requires that they ask us. Additionally, if the state brings in more money or whatever the local organization, government organization is, brings in more money than a particular complicated formula, they have to ask us if they can keep the overage. If we say no, they have to send the excess back to us. So it's sort of like you send your kid to go to McDonald's to pick up some dinner for the family. You give him $20. He doesn't get to keep the change. He brings the change back to mom, right? So it's that kind of thing. But yeah, Tabor has been under attack in Colorado almost since the day it was passed because politicians don't want to ask. They believe that they know better than we do how our money should be spent. And let's be very clear, government doesn't have money. It is our money. And they don't want to have to ask. They don't want to make their case. So in Colorado, we have a proposition on our November ballot called CC. And what it will do is that overage part that I talked about, it would let your kid keep the change after you give them the $20, even though the hamburgers were only 10, without ever asking. And so that's kind of a big deal. They would be able to devise new schemes to raise more money, knowing that they wouldn't have to refund it to the taxpayers.
Can't they? Isn't there something that just happened in the Supreme Court, the Colorado Supreme Court, that said that now they can repeal Tabor completely? Am I mistaken on that?
Yeah, no, you're not mistaken. And there were press releases about Prop CC and what you're talking about the same day, and so it confused people. So Prop CC is what's going to be on the ballot in November in Colorado, and it's about that overage, it's the extra McDonald's money. The full repeal of Tabor, there was a group that said to the Secretary of State's office, here are some titles that we could possibly use to repeal Tabor. And in the Secretary of State's office, there's something called a title board that says, yes, this is a legal title of a ballot initiative. And so there were some wranglings with the court. The title board said, no, it was too complicated to be a ballot issue title. The Supreme Court said it's fine. So that's the news that we had out last week in Colorado. The state Supreme Court said, you are now cleared to use that title to repeal Tabor. Now, I say bring it on because I don't think Colorado would let that consent go. But it's almost impossible for them to do it this year. Do they want to do it in 2020 when Donald Trump is on the ballot for reelection? I don't know if they want to bring out people scared of losing Tabor at that point. But in some future year, maybe as early as 2020, they could use that title to repeal Tabor. So it sort of removed a roadblock for them, but there's nothing imminent on this year's ballot, pardon me, in Colorado.
Yeah. You are just so clear on this stuff. As I tend to do, I like to wax philosophical and do the commentary on it. You know, the facts are the facts, but the commentary, as far as I'm concerned, get your thoughts, is that this drew the line in the sand and exposed the government bureaucrats for who they really are. And there's an old phrase, the left likes anything so long as it's mandatory. So if
right.
I love that one, you know, they don't want to ask permission for all kinds of reasons, but it's always good to make bureaucrats and arrogant politicians explain themselves. And this was particularly wonderful for Colorado. Not only did it keep the budget balanced, but it made clear that there are politicians every day and twice on Shabbos that constantly want to take your money and spend it the way they want. They constantly, enough is never enough. What I really wanted to say is that this makes it clear that they work for us and that we're the ones with the power. And that's why they hate it, because they spent all that time and effort and walk in their district so they could be the ones with the power, not us.
Yeah,
your thoughts.
You're exactly right. And on the back of my book, and thanks for mentioning it, I talk about, just on the back jacket, that we need to set straight the relationship between citizens and their government. And I phrase it that way on purpose. It is our government. It belongs to us. We are not citizens of the government. But the relationship is wrong. I have another organization in my local area, Colorado Springs, called SpringsTaxpayers.com, where we kind of keep an eye on the scoundrels in local government. Let me tell you, regardless of political party, not all politicians are looking out for the taxpayers. And we just,
you think?
we just helped expose something that was going on where there's this big shopping center and a big store was coming in. They got a tax break. The other little stores are like, that's not fair. And we were helpful in communicating all of that kind of thing. It got killed today at the Colorado Springs City Council meeting.
Oh, congratulations. Breaking news. Yes.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Karen, that at the local level, you know, it's hard to influence what's happening in Congress or in the White House. But, man, you get connected in with your local school board, your city council, your county commission. Your voice really makes a difference. And we organized our little Springs Taxpayers organization, and they are not happy we're around, and that means we're doing our jobs.
And that means you wear that as a badge of courage. This has been so instructive for people to see all the different ways they can make a difference when you got the gumption and you got, things that you really, really care about. And these are all enormously important issues. And this half hour has gone way too quickly. Tell everybody where they can get your book and how they can find you online and connect with you on Facebook and Twitter.
Sure thing. So my book is available on Amazon. It's called Government Ruins Nearly Everything. If you go to my main website, lauracarno.com, there's a big picture of it. If you click on the picture, it'll take you right to that link on Amazon.com. FasterColorado.com for the ARM teacher training information. And then if folks wanted to know how to set up a local watchdog organization, we'd love to help you. And that work you can see at SpringsTaxpayers.com.
Ah, I love it. So much talent, so much passion. I have the theory that people are already worked up. They just not need to have a place to go use it. And you
Absolutely.
Offer them that. So thanks so much for being with us, Laura Carno. And thanks for spouting off. Love to have you back again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Great show. Thanks, Karen.
Oh, thank you, Laura. That's Laura Carno of lauracarno.com and of faster.com. Get her book, Government Ruins Nearly Everything. It just puts it right there on the line. That is all the time we have for this edition of Spouting Off. Visit me at my website, www.karencataline.com. Same thing for Facebook and Twitter. Just know my name. The last name is spelled Kataline. Cataline rhymes with spleen, and you will find me. Thank you to Doug, my producer, and to BBS Radio. Thanks to HW, the multi-talented guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish, that is, and who just happens to be my husband now. And tune in next week when there's going to be oh so much to spout off about here on Spouting Off.